Objection! Hello, everybody. Welcome to Objection, the worldwide leader in contrarian a-holery. I am contrarian a-hole number one, David Johnson, joined by contrarian a-hole 1B. I guess I'm 1A, 1B. Dan Mancini. Dan, how are you going? How's it going?
I'm doing well.
Now, is it Happy President's Day or Merry President's Day? What is it?
I think it ought to be Merry
President's Day.
Yeah,
Merry President's Day. So as always, as you know, one of the benefits, Dan, of having our podcast run on a Monday is we typically align with many federal holidays. So and therefore, yeah. It's like it's a layup for us if we're struggling with content. We'll just say, "What federal holiday is this Monday? Let's do something with that." And that is the case here.
Right. Exactly. Be it groundhogs or presidents or
that's right. Arbors.
Know, whatever it is. Arbors, yeah.
I'm looking forward to the foliage contrary and objection podcast we pull out for Arbor Day. But anyway, this is President's Day, so we thought for our President's Day special, we would we bounced a couple of ideas around before settling on the one we went to. Do we want to just quickly run through some of those?
Yeah, one of them the first one was great – movie
great movie. Like the only one I came up with was Harrison Ford in Air Force One, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure if we thought more, we could have come up with more or thought harder.
Right.
But, you know, it was kind of not a real exciting and not a very contrarian,
right, yeah,
a-hole sort of idea anyway. So then we came up with the douchiest movie president.
That's right.
We thought about doing that.
I mean, that's the a-hole was definitely in place there.
Right, and top of my list would have been Michael Douglas in The American President.
Cloying, tedious movie.
You know, yeah, because you know, Aaron Sorkin is he's like the master of hectoring his audience with his own ideas about things through the dialogue of his characters, which I hate more than anything. Regardless of which end of the political spectrum you're on, I just hate it when a screenwriter or director just, you know, basically uses characters as a puppet.
And I would have gone
to say what they think.
Absolutely.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
How boring.
Absolutely. I would have gone with, probably Wayne Palmer from 24, whichever season it was, like season six or something. He was David Palmer's douchebag screw up younger brother who somehow got elected, even though he was implicit in the death of an aide or two. And he was, like, he sucked so bad. Some terrorist lit off a nuke, like in LA. And there was a great piece of dialogue. Wayne Palmer's like threatening the fictitious Al Qaeda leader type, saying, you know, if another one goes off, be ready. So you get one nuke with him, but two, that's the max.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But I don't want to,
you know, the other idea that we didn't discuss that we could have done was just an entire show dedicated to President Dwayne Elizondo Mountain Dew Herbert Camacho from Idiocracy.
Oh, yes. Because
that would have been awesome.
That's true. That is.
Played by none other than Terry Crews. So.
But we did end up on we decided to really pump up both the a-holery and the contrarian aspect. And we decided to tackle two of the big screen's most famous authoritarian a-holes. And actually defend them.
Yes. Yeah.
So did I just say attack? Or no, what did I say? Did I say attack and defend them? I don't know if I said that. But we identified two, and we will defend them now. And to help us, we brought in an expert whose knowledge spans both of these disciplines that we're going to tackle, Mac McIntyre. Yes. Greetings, Mac.
Hi there.
So I guess so Dan and I each have someone in mind that we're – to do our best to defend and argue the merits of his rule and his worldview. Mac, you're going to have the thankless job of trying to help us no matter how uphill a battle it is. So let's see, Dan, why don't you start off? Who is the cinema despot we're going to look on? We're going to look for the silver lining in?
Emperor Palpatine,
yes,
from the Star Wars saga.
So we're going to try to argue that Emperor Palpatine got a bad rap.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Well, Dan, why don't you start off? What are some bullet points on the pro Palpatine PowerPoint you would check off?
Well, I mean, the guy, instead of taking power by force, you know, he basically just convinced everybody to give him power. So, I mean, you have to give it up to him for that. He was a skilled politician. You know, I mean, he just convinced him to hand everything over.
I mean, he largely operated within the confines of the law and the system, correct?
Right, yeah. And when in doubt, he just changed the law to suit his purposes rather than break it. You know, you got to give it up to the guy for that. I can guarantee you that the trains or transports or whatever run on time during Palpatine's rule.
So the infrastructure improvements are noticeable.
Yes. And let's face it, there is no more massive shovel-ready job than the Death
Star. That is like the ultimate stimulus package, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
Mac, why don't you build off of this, the airtight case we're building here?
So it's not that fear will keep the people in line. It's that steady paychecks will keep the people in line.
Well, did he say
exactly.
That?
I mean, the unions loved him. You have to know that the unions loved him.
Yes, the public sector unions loved him. But that was Grand Moff Tarkin who said that anyway, right?
Oh, that's true.
I mean, that guy was a douchebag. I mean, he blew up Alderaan, and that sucked, you know. But who's to say he went a little rogue? I mean, the Emperor didn't come in until like round two.
Yeah. He was talking about the private sector, I think. Anyways.
Oh, okay.
Fear will keep the private sector in.
Yeah, but so many jobs, obviously, the Death Star created. You know, so many.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Millions.
Or just even the stormtroopers, because they ran out of clones, I think. Mac, didn't George Lucas say that he thought that in the time of the original trilogy, the clones had kind of run out, so they were just actually enlisted men, I think, you know?
Yeah, Lucas has kind of gone back and forth on that over the years. I think some were clones and others were just guys in the stormtrooper suits. It's really iffy.
Clearly, the ones who are clones were like copies of copies of copies.
That's right. So, yeah, like the Michael Keaton copy in Multiplicity, the last one, you know?
Right.
Well, Mac, you've got some extended knowledge into the universe of Star Wars. What else do you see in the Emperor that we can give him props for?
Okay, well, let's see here. I've got an excerpt here from the original novelization of Star Wars from 1976, dated a year before the movie came out, which is allegedly written by George and allegedly co-written by Alan Dean Foster. Who knows? But the prologue from this book is where we actually first learned the name Palpatine.
Okay.
And it says, so the excerpt here says, aided and abetted by restless, power-hungry individuals within the government and the massive organs of commerce, the ambitious Senator Palpatine caused himself to be elected President of the Republic. He promised to reunite the disaffected among the people and to restore the former glory of the Republic. Then, once secure in office, he declared himself emperor, shutting himself away from the populace. Soon he was controlled by the assistants and the bootlickers that he had appointed to office, and the cries of the people for justice did not reach his ears.
So, there you go. They didn't reach his ears. So, you can't blame him, right?
No.
Right. You know, as, you know, we... All along, even in the prequels, he had this disdain for the bureaucrats. He hated the bureaucrats.
I mean, how is that not a worldview we can't all get behind, you know?
Right.
So plausible deniability.
Exactly. It's not him. It's the bureaucrats and, as it says here, the bootlickers. You know, they're the ones who are the best.
So you got to think Grand Moff Tarkin. He's like the mother of all bureaucrats. He would fit into that, you know?
Could be.
I mean, and for me, it comes down to look at what the Republic looked like prior to Palpatine. We get a glimpse of that in the first couple episodes of the prequel trilogy, right? I mean, you're essentially the Jedi are really just the circle of douchebags sitting around pontificating in their temple, right? You know they're completely out of touch with humanity, completely out of touch with the common person. You got this.
There is no middle class.
There is no middle class
in the original. It's the haves and the have-nots.
You got the Trade Federation. I mean, who? You know, yes, they got used, obviously, but they were promptly dismantled and wiped out, and all those other lame guilds that were mentioned in the second movie, I can't remember what, like the Cucumber Guild or whatever. But anyway, they were all, you know, but the Trade Federation, I mean, run by some irritating, corrupt, you know, men who were too stupid to find out they were being used, you know, so riddance. And you'd have to think he oversaw the extermination of the Gungans, so that's a win column. That's something in the win column. Yeah, I just don't think it was. It wasn't a great. I don't think it was. It was pretty sucky in there, you know? I mean, look at how nothing got done in the Senate, right? I mean, there was like...
Exactly.
I mean, we have gridlock in the U.S., you know, the U.S. Senate. We only got 50 members.
Yeah, we don't have that huge room with the floating disc thing.
Who's like, who is the lame planet that's at the bottom of that, you know? Right. It's like those, I don't know, it's got to be, I keep mentioning this guy, but that's because he sucks, but it's got to be the Bib Fortuna people, right?
Yeah.
It's just disgusting and awful.
And it's got that neck. It's just horrifying.
Yes. Yes.
He's got the tentacles out of his head and then the floppy neck thing, the double or triple chin or whatever it is. It's just, it's terrifying.
I mean, really, it took Emperor Palpatine to kind of get the Jedi Order refocused on what they were supposed to do. You know, it looked like they got fat and happy and lazy in power. They were oblivious. Every single one of them is oblivious. Even Yoda, totally oblivious, you know?
Right.
Because yeah, oblivious, arrogant. Yeah.
Yeah. What's that, Mac? Yeah.
Because the Force was out of whack.
That's true. Absolutely. So, I mean, they were essentially Jedi bureaucrats collecting their pensions, sitting on their fat butts, you know, not getting anything done.
Right. You have Qui-Gon in the first movie saying, well, you know, I didn't come here to free slaves.
That's right.
So let's leave Anakin's mom here.
Even though it was totally in his power. He could have done whatever he wanted to, obviously.
Yeah, did
he had a lightsaber.
Yeah, Watto would not have put up a fight. He would have diced him up like a flying Genoa salami. Nope. I mean, Obi-Wan, young Obi-Wan, before the S hits the fan, again, an oblivious idiot completely. And, you know, and...
With a rat tail.
With a rat tail and a killjoy, too. You know, a total killjoy. So, you know, Luke finally was able to kind of refocus things and get it rolling, even though he was a whiny crybaby. But, at least he got an edge. So, I mean, you got to give the Emperor at least, you know, you got to understand that the Emperor allowed for people to make idiotic decisions and they screwed themselves over. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. So, and again, the Alderaan explosion, pretty incriminating, but I'm going to pin that one on Grand Moff Tarkin.
And I'll add this too. In the Old Republic, I guarantee you, regardless of moves at the Battle of Tanab or anything else, people like Lando Calrissian and Han Solo would not have become generals in any kind
of army. That's
right. In that old system.
Yeah, because they had checkered past.
The good middle-class guys, forget
with baggage, but were effective. Officers. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. I mean, Admiral Akbar is considered the top line, but I mean, I would think there would probably be rampant prejudice against his ugly ass in the Old Republic. Who is uglier, Admiral Akbar or Bib Fortuna? That's the question. I don't know. Who would you be more terrified to wake up
with the red eye?
Wake up in a bed next to you one morning, one of those guys. Who would terrify you the most?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Bib Fortuna because he's also got the creepy fingernails as well.
Yeah, I would go Bib Fortuna as well because who knows what he was doing with that tentacle thing while I was sleeping.
Oh.
All right.
And he has fangs.
And he has fangs and beady eyes and pale, sallow skin. And yeah. Screw you, Bib Fortuna. Screw you. All right. Very good. Well, not a bad. Anything to add, or do you think we've covered as many bases as we can with this guy?
I think that covers
it.
Okay. You know, I'll take Palpatine over Fidel Castro.
That's right.
And I suppose you could argue that, like a lot of villains, he speaks the truth. You know, during the confrontation between Luke and Vader and Jedi, you know, everything he's saying is more or less right. He's not lying to Luke. He can see that there's all this tension brewing inside Luke, and he's just pointing it out.
Right.
You know? So that's a classic. That's a classic villain move, is to, you know, point out the truth to the hero when the hero is weak. So, you know, I guess honesty of a sort.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and even in Episode 3, it's not Palpatine's fault that the Jedi are a bunch of douchebags. He's just pointing it out.
Yeah. I mean, they're worse than douchebags. They're incompetent douchebags. You know,
yeah.
They had no idea anything was coming. They got completely caught off guard with their pants down, and they allowed a bunch of their kids to get hacked up by the obviously whacked out student Anakin. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. All right, let's move on to the despot that I'll be defending, again in the sci-fi fantasy world, and this is kind of limited to the one movie that I saw, and that is the legendary Ming the Merciless from the Flash Gordon from 1980 with Sam J. Jones, one of our favorites in Podcast Nation. Yes. Here, and one of my all-time favorite horrible movies, but you know, Ming the Merciless. I mean, the Merciless. He's obviously painted from the get-go as this really, really terrible guy, you know. And I mean, so what can we do? Is Ming the Merciless goatee and eyeliner and date rape drug everything? Is he defendable, Mac? What goal? What can we find in Ming the Merciless that we can defend?
Well, interesting. You should say the word defendable.
Okay.
Because I'm going to step back from the 1980 movie for a second, and I'm going to go to one of my all-time favorite animated series from the 80s, which is Defenders of the
Okay.
Earth, where Ming was, of course, the big bad.
Really? Okay. All right, good. I like this Yeah. extended fiction. This will help us.
Yeah.
Yes. And, of course, the heroes of that show were a bunch of the old-timey heroes. You had Flash Gordon, you had the Phantom, and you had Mandrake the Magician and his manservant Lothar.
Was he really referred to as the manservant?
Well, back in the old days he was, but in Defenders of the Earth he was more like one of the guys.
Okay. So back in the old days people were resting their feet on him like he was an ottoman. That's what you're saying.
So Lothar got his due in the 80s, fortunately. But he was the bad guy. This is one of those versions where they color him green so that people won't think he's Asian and they won't get it.
Yes.
That's the thing. A lot of people will take Ming and they'll color him green. Say, see, look, alien, not Asian. And he did do a lot of bad things. You know, he had the army of ice robots that was constantly attacking the Earth and stuff like that. But it's a matter of comparison, you know, because as nasty as Ming was on that show, he was nothing compared to his son, Krotan.
Oh, right.
Yeah. There was a 5-part epic series, or a little mini series or whatever, a 5-part story. And this was one of those shows that was on Monday through Friday, so it was a whole week-long event, was the Prince Krotan story. Krotan attacked his own father, Ming, shrunk Ming down to a submolecular size and kept him in this little itty-bitty chamber. And then Krotan, being a real evil bastard, he put all these bombs all over the Earth. They're thought bombs, and they're attached directly to his brain, so that any time Krotan wanted to blow up the Earth, he could just think it, and the Earth would explode.
Ouch, nasty.
So, yeah.
I'd be worried about thinking it by
dreaming it or something, you know?
Yeah, what if you have a dream? So
then you're saying that compared to Krotan, Ming really wasn't as tyrannical as people. Like, the next guy is always way more tyrannical than the guy you think is bad. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. You know, once they defeated Krotan and Ming returned to power, suddenly, you know, Ming didn't seem so bad anymore.
I like that. That's an interesting approach.
There you go.
Like, for me, it really boils down to one major thing, and again, looking in the 1980 movie, when, you know, we first see the throne room with all the freaks from all the planets gathered around, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it is obvious to me that without Ming there to regulate things, it would be just a humongous galaxy-spanning war full of bloodshed and horror, you know, because the Hawkmen hate the plant men, right? You know, everyone hates each other. So without the threat of Ming's force and or regulation, I mean, that you would just have species constantly being wiped out over and over again. I mean, it would make the Israeli-Palestinian conflict look like playtime. I mean, they were just itching to get – they were itching to mix it up right there. So what happens if there wasn't someone to rein it in? Horror beyond
things. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was my thought exactly. And, you know, I have to say that the denizens of Mongo and surrounding planets, I guess, have got to be the stupidest, most pliant people in the universe because they're held together by a shared fear of Ming.
Which is unfounded,
and then
utterly.
Right. Right, and then Flash Gordon comes along, and he's pretty much dumb as a rock. But he manages to use their hatred of Ming to unite them. They overthrow Ming, and then presumably they're just going to follow
Flash. No, Barry.
Flash, because you know he's got he's got good biceps and wears a tank top and
with a light,
you know, has nice feathered hair or whatever.
Actually, they all just become subservient to Baron without even this Baron is the rightful heir. I mean, I know it's Timothy Dalton, and we would all serve Timothy Dalton in some kind of emperor aspect. I understand that, but there's zero legislative process. So it's like they want the tyranny in Mongo.
Right, right. It's not like they're going to convene and write a constitution now and, you know, figure out, put together delegations from all the various peoples and everything. It's just now it's Baron and presumably Ming's daughter, who has shown that she can pretty much manipulate Baron however she wants to. So really, she's in charge.
That's true.
They've traded Ming for Ming's daughter.
Exactly. And we know that Baron is a complete doormat because, I mean, she admits to him that she's like banged everyone, like Ming's personal dentist, and, you know, on the ice world or something.
She has a pleasure mood.
That's right. She has her own pleasure mood, and he doesn't care. He doesn't care.
I mean, yeah. I you know, one of the first things one of my first rules back when I was dating before I was married was, you know, if I start dating somebody, they got to ditch the pleasure mood. That's all
that's
there
right,
is
yeah.
to it.
Look, I got to tell a line somewhere.
I'm not that kind of doormat, you know. Sorry.
I don't care about your past, but you have to at least sell the pleasure moon.
Right.
See, the other thing,
we won't get into the past, but moving forward, pleasure moon has got to
The other thing about Ming is he doesn't put himself or his kin, well, maybe he puts himself, but he doesn't put his daughter above the law. Because when you remember, he finds out that she's been maybe cavorting with Flash and has information, he unleashes the boar worms on her, no problem, right? It's like, yeah. It doesn't matter if you are my daughter, you are still subject to the rules of the law. So, I mean, it's Ming's law, but still. And I don't think he'd have the boar worms turned on himself either. But.
Well, yeah, and I mean, clearly he makes it clear at the very beginning of the movie that he's bored with all their shenanigans. And that's the only reason he really goes after Earth.
Right.
Because, you know, the people of Mongo are so ridiculous.
That's right.
He can't deal with it anymore.
That's true. And can you really blame him for wanting to rain down hot hail on Wisconsin?
Right. No.
I've always been stunned that hot hail is, you know, is the same in Mongoese as it is in English.
Yes.
Same thing.
Yeah, they speak English there.
Plus, you know, Ming is very progressive as far as hiring policies. Like those guys, those computer guys with the visors, they obviously have some disabilities, but he's willing to look past that.
Right.
<No? laughs> I mean, look at Clytus. His tongue is too big for his face. You know? He's the second in command. But I was going to say that the whole merciless thing is totally overblown because when push comes to shove, the best Ming can summon up to repel the invaders is War Rocket Ajax, which sucks.
Yeah.
You know, it is commanded by idiots, and it is awful. It is an awful weapon, but that is apparently the best they have to offer. And his lasers mounted on his palace can't hit anything that's dead ahead of him, right? It just fires off into the atmosphere, laser beams. So, I mean, he's not that fearsome, obviously.
No, no.
He
allows the condom people to live, whatever those little dudes are.
The Trojanites are allowed to live. his elite guard get bested by one man with a football, you know, running the spread formation. That's how he beats him. So let's be honest, he's not that fearsome.
No, no. I that was probably a name that came up or was invented by his opponent in whatever campaign he was elected to.
That's right.
To lead Mongo.
I wanted Ming the Merry, but no, it was Ming the Merciless.
Right.
I don't know. Very good. Anything to add? Mac, anything else to add to the Ming? Okay.
Let's see. Well, I cheated and I pulled up Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Here, and according
it's not called cheating. It's called doing your due diligence as show prep. So
okay.
Right. Which, by the way, it's kind of an indictment of this show that our guests always consistently have documentation and preparation.
Without fail.
And we have nothing. But whatever, it happens to be swirling around in our brain.
Without fail. That is absolutely correct. Continue, Mac.
So on the Flash Gordon soundtrack to the 1980 movie,
excellent.
Rock band Queen wrote a song that was Ming the Merciless's theme.
Yes.
So if Queen writes a theme song,
you're not allowed to be
doing right. something right.
That's right. You're not allowed to be awful. Correct.
Right.
All right. Here's the final question for the panel. Who would you prefer to be ruled by, the Emperor or Ming the Merciless? Dan?
Oh, man, it's a tough call. I think Ming has a better fashion sense.
That's true. He does. He's a sharp dresser.
By virtue of lightsaber and Death Star, I'm going to have to go with the Emperor.
All right. Nice. Because, you know, if you're on his good side, he'll get you back, you would think, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to think unemployment would be very, very,
very low.
Very low,
yes.
In the Empire.
Right, I agree. I mean, if you survive to your 60, you're looking at a nice pension probably, you know, unless you get blown up by a well-placed photon torpedo or whatnot, so.
Right, unless you happen to be somewhere where, you know, the rebels come and bomb the place.
That's right.
Tell you.
All right, Mac, Ming or the Emperor?
That's a
Who's
tough
your
one.
Despot of choice?
Let's see. Well, you know, Ming has a whole boar worms thing going on. I don't really like them too much.
That would be a bummer.
Who does?
Who does? Who among us likes a boar worm?
And Star Wars, if you don't like the Emperor and his decisions, you can always just go to the Outer Rim and hang out in one of those Outer Rim planets where, like, it doesn't matter.
That's right.
Everybody talks about the Outer Rim, but nobody seems to be aware of it.
Is Tatooine? Tatooine's not an Outer Rim planet, is it?
It might be.
Because really, no one bothered them until, you know, C-3PO and R2-D2 crash landed there, right?
Yeah, and you know, it's not part of the Republic, correct? So before the Republic.
That's true. Right. Right.
So I would say that if it's not technically Outer Rim, it's the same idea. It's kind of, you know, on the outskirts.
Yeah, I think in the deleted scenes of the original Star Wars, Luke, when he's talking to Biggs or whoever it is it Biggs? He says, you know, the Empire will never get out here, or they're not aware of what's going on here. And I think Biggs brings up the, you know, well, they might eventually. Come out
well played, Biggs.
But, you know, take over all the farms and make, you know, Owen Larza.
maybe there's like a need for sand.
Employee
at some
of
point.
The Empire, I guess. Yeah.
You know, it occurs to me that you could have swapped Biggs and Porkins, you know, and it would still have meant the same because obviously Porkins was given to that character just because he was a fat tub of goo. You know, you call him Biggs too, right?
Yeah.
That's just a random. Idle thought. So then, Mac, you're settling on the Emperor as your despot of choice?
It's a tough call, but I suppose so, yeah.
You know, I'm going back and forth, too, and the only reason I would at least go towards the Emperor was because he's apparently asexual, right? Whereas Ming is a horn dog. So I would just fear that he would eye my daughter or something, and then she would be given that date rape drug, you know, a roofie that he gets for all of his servant girls and marry her and then blast her into atoms, right? So
yeah, that is an incredibly disturbing sequence in that film. That, you know,
well, just because it's Max Vines,
he drugs all of his women, his concubines, you know, before having his way with them, so that they can tolerate it. I mean, it's just awful.
Then again,
it's really
like,
awful.
I wouldn't really be afraid of anyone he would send to my homestead to retrieve my daughter. Because even a second in command is an idiot, because he'll just stand right on the edge of like the Hawkman's palace and allow himself to be tackled by Flash Gordon and impaled. You know, I mean, he's
right. And as long as you don't have a like a butterfingered scientist feeding you footballs, you can pretty much defeat his army.
That's true. I mean, really,
just by throwing balls at.
Because
him.
if the scientist, whatever his name was, Quick, what's the guy's name?
Zarkov.
Yeah.
I know he's played by Topol, but yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think was an Eastern European mid-sized sedan at that time. but yeah, seriously, if Zarkov didn't screw that up, who knows what could have come about that football game, right?
Yeah, that movie could have been 15 minutes long. Flash Gordon defeated all of them.
He would have taken out Ming right there. Absolutely. And he was getting everyone going, too. Yeah. So, boy, that's an essay for another day. How the movie would not have been necessary had Zarkov knew how to throw. But anyway, yeah, I'd probably go either way. I'm going to go back with Ming, just because he doesn't have the weaponry that the Emperor has at his disposal. You know, I could easily be collateral damage if the Emperor is pissed at, you know, a continent nearby. He could wipe out the whole planet. So with Ming, he doesn't really have any firepower that disturbs me. So, and he's just, and plus, he's more or less interested in torturing other planets away from me, right? Yeah. He just wants his tribute. You know, and if worse came to worse, I'd go live with the Trojanites, you know, just kind of, you know, just mix in there, the Latexians and the Trojanites. So. Yeah.
I will, just to defend Earthlings, though. You know, he acts like everybody on planet Earth is just the side of a monkey. Yeah, we're not nearly as moronic as these people from Mars.
Of course.
Most of them. You know, it takes a lot of nerve for them to be looking down their noses at us.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. I mean, I don't think there's a single species that we were exposed to on Mongo, you know, that would last longer than 30 minutes in Detroit.
No.
And that includes, Brian Blessed for sure. So, all right. Well, on that Brian Blessed note, I was like, we should always end our podcast with Brian Blessed. You know, dive!
Exactly.
I guess that's it. So, man, well played, gentlemen. I was telling these guys that I was possibly tossing the idea of defending Mola Ram out maybe next year. If we really, he seems pretty defensible, but there's not much worthwhile him. But I would say maybe next year, look for Mola Ram and Hugo Drax, perhaps.
Bav Morda.
Whoa, yes. Nice. We might have to take a look at Bav Morda in the near future. Thank you, Mac. That's a great suggestion. Anybody who can be defeated by the disappearing pig trick is not as fearsome as advertised. And you know what the common link is between Mola Ram and Bav Morda? Their second in command was played by Pat Roach. There you go.
Nice.
So there's a teaser for some, you know, something down the road, we'll see. So someone's phone is ringing, so I'll let you guys go.
That's me.
Dan, anything else to say?
Thanks. 10 points easy.